Somewhere in the dark, nasty regions, where nobody goes, stands an ancient cupboard. Deep within this dank and uninviting place lives Beck. Hello! Overworked servant of the Matt Parker.
Beck, feed me!
But that's nothing compared to the problems sent in by their listeners. For there are always questions being posed from the website, wanting to be read out. Don't you open that spreadsheet? You're a fool if you dare. Don't you open that spreadsheet? Because it's problem squared. Da-na,
da-na. That's good.
Thank you.
For the listeners' record, all the problems you enter in the problem posing page go into a spreadsheet.
Yes.
And that's the spreadsheet that we are...
That is the spreadsheet.
...being warned to not open.
Don't open it.
Don't open that spreadsheet.
More than 1,000.
That show, Trapdoor, terrified me as a kid.
Yeah. So, hello. Welcome.
Oh, welcome to the podcast.
Any new listeners, this is not The Trapdoor. This is A Problem Squared, a podcast where myself, Beck, chill.
Beck, chill. Be chill. You're doing a Halloween special.
Technically, yes. This is the end of September, so we're about to go into October.
Ooh.
We're about to go into spooky season.
Yeah.
I'm joined by that other voice, the bodiless
That's
voice.
Me. There's no one else in the room, Beck.
What?
What? But Matt died 50 years ago.
That is comedian, mathematician, YouTuber extraordinaire, Matt Parker.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah. And yes.
Yes.
You were talking about the trap. Yeah,
that
was me parodying the opening to The Trapdoor, which... For anyone who doesn't know, was a stop motion animation.
Yeah.
They're only about 5 minute episodes. And they came out, guess when they came out?
I remember watching them in what would have been the late 80s.
Yeah, I remember the 90s.
Right.
Yeah.
So when did they come out?
86.
86.
The Trapdoor is as old as me.
There you go. Wow.
That blows my mind. I remember there was one where there was a bit where he leaves the castle, this little blue guy, he leaves it and it ends. And you're like, that's the last episode. Like, it blew my mind. And then after the credits, he showed back up and he was like, all right, I'm back. And that was it. And it was my first experience of a post-credit.
Dean.
This is way before Marvel.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe it. I thought it was the funniest thing I'd seen. I thought it was the cleverest. Like, to me, it was so avant-garde.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And since then, I've always been obsessed with post-credit things.
You watch Solar Opposites. It's all the sci-fi ridiculousness of Justin Roiland from Rick and Morty. Without being problematic.
Right.
I absolutely love it. And they have done my all-time favorite setting up a post-credit
gag. Okay. I'm going to have to watch it now for that.
So
okay.
Good. Oh, anyway, we're doing a podcast.
Oh, yeah. In this episode...
I've run the numbers on the 2002 hit song... Year 3000 by Busted.
I'm looking at nipples.
and
I've got
solving
a problem.
Yeah. And the problem squareds are going to New York.
Ooh. More of that in Any Other Business. All right, Matt.
I'm okay.
Have you been since we last spoke?
My voice is croakier.
It is croaky.
Yeah, I thought I'd better flag that up.
I prefer to say husky.
Husky.
Yeah.
I'll take husky. I think I mentioned this maybe in the Patreon-only bonus I'm a Wizard podcast that I was going to be doing a geometric building thing at a festival.
Yes.
I have now done that.
Yeah. So now you can talk about what
I can now talk about.
Instead of just saying geometrical building.
Oh, yeah. I was making mirror balls.
Yes.
So there's a big festival called the Big Feastival, which is in the Cotswolds. It's achingly middle-aged, middle-class, middle-everything, middle-England.
It was founded by Alex James from Blur, wasn't it?
From Blur, yeah, bass player.
The cheese one.
The cheese one, who's also a big maths fan.
Oh.
So rock star Alex James watches maths videos about YouTube and reached out one time to say, hey, I love your videos. Do you want to come to my festival and eat some cheese?
Of course he did.
And I said yes. I assume all his rock star friends just think that I'm his accountant or something.
Yeah,
like, that's the only logical explanation for why Lucy and I are milling around.
That's so unfair to yourselves. You're
it's
both
so
very
true, though.
Funny
Come
and
on.
Interesting people.
Yeah, and where there is like his pet scientists. So we'll talk to his other buddies, artists and whatnot. about science and math and stuff, which is great fun. And we thoroughly enjoy it.
He was like, Brian Cox is doing well.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe I should go down that route.
Exactly. That's it. You go rock star, then you go science.
Yeah.
Or maths. He's like, hey, that's math star. That's the direction.
They say you work in STEM twice in your career.
You do on the way up and on the way down. But many times we're discussed doing a maths thing at the festival. And so I said, because Alex James has kind of like a festival inside a festival. They're like the big festival that's on his property, his farm.
Mm.
And within that, because then that's run by a proper festival. He's got his own cheese hub, which is like a converted, it's where the sheep live the rest of the year. They put in DJs and bars. And he has his own sub-festival. And I'm like, how about we do a geometric building activity where I make geometric mirror balls that will go up in the dance section of the cheese hub.
Now, mirror balls are technically geometric though, aren't they?
A lot of things are.
Yeah, yeah. That's true.
But they're made of little squares.
Yes.
Who sticks squares on a sphere? That's the worst way.
I see.
The worst way to do it. So I looked up other ridiculous shapes that approximate a sphere. Found one which had 150 faces. It was only discovered in 2019, I think, a couple of years ago. Crazy shape. I loved it. I thought it would make a great disco ball, specifically mirror ball. And particularly because it's a shape with handedness.
Handedness.
Handedness. As in it's got chirality. As in there's a right-handed...
It's a perfectly cromulent word.
That's a real word.
So really you've embiggens
got... embiggens the symmetries. Right. No, so you've got like a right-hand and a left-hand version. Because if... Actually, there's a football in my office right behind your back. That football, if you looked at it in the mirror, would be indistinguishable from the original football.
Oh, yes.
It's perfectly symmetric.
Got it.
But some shapes, if you look at them in the mirror, look different because they flip. If you look at a left hand in a mirror, it looks like a right hand.
Yes.
And so we use that as an expression to say left or right handed. And then we generalize that to say there's like a left and a right handed versions of shapes.
And are these two dimensional or three dimensional shapes?
They can be any number of dimensions. You can have whether or not.
Seven.
Correct. You can have seven. It's one heck of a disco. So it depends what you're on in the disco.
Yeah. Yeah.
It depends if you can see through time or not. I think that's... So I designed a mirror ball that had chirality, and then we built both versions, the left-handed and the right-handed, which are themselves mirrors of each other. And then they were suspended and they rotated in opposite directions.
Oh,
so they moved like they were mirror images of mirror balls.
That's
and
cool.
I thought I was terribly clever.
Yeah.
Had a good laugh. A friend of mine laser cut an awful lot of mirrored acrylic, and then we built them and installed them at the festival. But the reason that links to my croaky voice is this was right in the heat wave in the UK.
Oh, yeah.
And the farm was incredibly dusty. We were building right where the DJs were.
Mm-hmm.
And so I spent basically a weekend inhaling dust and yelling over DJs.
Right.
And my voice has still not fully recovered from that experience.
Your life is worth so it for the balls. Hard.
I know. I'm not here for sympathy. I'm here to explain myself. How have you been?
I've been well. I went to a festival as well. I went to End of the Road Festival, which is in Dorset.
Pretty much the end of the road.
I in Dorset. It's so much fun. It's a really fun festival. It's good for families, but it's also just good for people who don't want to go too hard at a festival, but still want to...
They want to go medium.
Yeah. There's a really nice forest where they put all these lovely lights and installations. So you walk through and it's very pretty. And the comedy part is so fun. There's a big slope and they just put these hay bales on.
Everyone sits on the slope.
And then they have a stage at the front, a bit like an amphitheatre. There is something very nice from a performer's perspective of looking at an audience from an amphitheatre sort of thing because you can see them all.
Yeah, they're
the sound
they're
isn't yeah. like they can all hear better. So yeah, it was really, really fun. I did an entirely new set. So I decided to do a bit that I was trying out, which was my celebrity pun fair.
Celebrity pun fair.
Yeah, puns on celebrity names.
Got
so
it.
I had the Ferris wheel, which was just pictures of Matthew Broderick's face. I made a puppet. I'll see if you can guess what the pun is, all right? It's a fun fair setting.
Yep.
The puppet is a coconut with a little beret, black curly moustache, and big arms and muscles as if it's like topless with a six-pack.
Ah, it's a strong coconut. What's the strong strength tester?
It's nothing to do with that.
Right. You also throw things at coconuts to try and knock them off
you
a thing?
Do you know what it's called?
I do not know what that is called. A coconut whack?
No.
Should be.
Roll up.
Over the coconut whack.
Here's the coconut.
Whack-a-nut, win a prize.
Whack-a-nut is the most Aussie version. So it's called a coconut shy.
A coconut what?
Shy.
Shy?
Yeah, S-H-Y.
So coconut shy Lester Stallone.
Oh, do you know what? You're not far off. Like, you are, but... But that was pretty good.
Okay, what was it?
I kind of don't want to say now. I kind of want people to guess.
Oh, really? Oh, okay, let's do it. Okay, yeah, we're not going to say. People.
I'm not going to say. We'll put the video up and then people will guess.
Wow.
They'll reply to it.
Yeah.
People love that stuff.
Okay, people want to guess. Beck, you're going to put it on the @aproblemsquared Twitter account.
Yeah, people reply with what they think. People probably got it listening to this now.
I want everyone to put Shia Lester Stallone.
Yes.
see if we can force a name change.
Do you know what? Someone else guessed one that was not correct, but a really fun one. And I really enjoy those quite a lot as well. But then it all worked up to the final bit, which I think I might start doing more often. I ended it with getting the audience, we're going to go on the world's largest roller coaster, not in terms of going up or down or anything. Yep. Doesn't go high. It's just that it's really wide. So
right.
The audience are all sitting in one
big carriage.
So I said, we're going to play some music. And when we're going up, everyone goes, whoa. When we're going down, everyone goes, whoa, put your hands in the air.
Love
and
it.
Then we'll move around, go side to side. And I was like, hit it. And so they start playing, never gonna give you up, gonna let you
That's
down.
Great.
But that was, of course, the Rick roller coaster.
Hey.
Oh, my goodness.
I didn't even see that sneaking up on me. Amazing.
Very proud of. Yeah. It was fun. But I tell you what, I forgot to say that punchline.
What?
So we did it. We played the music.
Yeah,
and then I was like, thanks very much. Bye. Yeah. And then I walked off. And then the wonderful Huge Davies, who was on after me, I said to him, I forgot to do my punchline. Can you say it? And he was like, okay. And he's quite deadpan in his delivery of stuff. So he just walked on. He was like, the first thing he said was like, Beck just said she forgot to say her punchline, which was Rick roller coaster. And then just shrugged. But it was wonderful.
I like to imagine the audience, like, you don't do the punchline. And like, for the next month, audience members are just waking up in the morning going, Rick roller coaster.
This first problem is for you, Matt. It's from Simon. And Simon says, in Busted's 2002 hit Year 3000, they proclaim that your great-great-great-granddaughter is pretty fine. Assuming technological advances in keeping humans alive. They do live underwater now, after all, which is...
We'll get to that. Yep,
a reference to the lyrics. What is the youngest this great-great-granddaughter could be with just 5 generations separating you in the year 2002 and her in the year 3000?
I'd totally forgotten about this song. I don't think I'd heard it since the 2000s.
I had never heard of it.
Really?
Even when it got played to me, I was like, nah, doesn't ring a bell.
Wow.
I don't know how I missed it. But I had never heard of it. And when I did the 2019 show, I'll Be Back, where the premise was that I go to the future and then tell everyone what's happening in the future. When I was asking people, what do you want to know about the future? So many people were like, do we live underwater?
And you're like, what?
And I was like,
why is
I just assumed everyone
this?
Was asking because of the climate crisis.
No, it's you know? Busted song.
But yeah, it was all
a boy band from England.
Yeah.
Called Busted.
But were you in uni in 2000?
Oh, I was, yes.
And you went to uni here, didn't you?
No, I was in Western Australia, in WA. I don't know why I know it. But it would have been like heard it on commercial radio or in shops, all that kind of.
Maybe I was deep in my Triple J phase then.
Me too. I wouldn't have heard it on Triple J.
Yeah.
I think because I moved to the UK in 2005. Maybe it was still in rotation at that point.
It might have just been still in rotation.
Yeah,
that might be it.
So I had to look it up. So I kind of half recognized it from the problem, but I went and watched the video and then downloaded the lyrics. And just to help us, I've printed out 2 copies of the lyrics.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So just for reference, I thought before we get to the great-great-granddaughter, we should just work out, given that these people have been to the year 3000 and discovered much about the future. Mm. Obviously, we know that they live underwater.
Okay.
But we should just check through
the rest of it.
The rest of it, yeah. Now, a lot of it is set up. They put a surprising amount of effort into explaining how they got to the year 3000, which is the obvious question.
Yeah, that's true.
A level of detail they don't carry on throughout the rest of the song.
Okay. They don't really commit.
No. But also, it's a bit of a cheat. To summarize the first verse, they heard a noise, went outside. One of their neighbors, who they name Peter. I don't know why. doesn't appear again, had built a flux capacitor based time machine, like from Back to the Future.
It'll be because Peter rhymes a little bit with capacitor.
You think so?
Yeah.
Real labored rhyme.
I don't know the tune of the song off my heart.
Yeah, okay.
So
yeah.
I'm reading this as if it's a poem.
it comes off worse.
Was my neighbor called Peter and a flux capacitor?
Maybe.
Yeah, but do you expect more from a boy band?
Shall I play that bit in and you can see if it rhymes?
Okay, yeah.
Okay, hang on, let me just pull it up. No, it is Peter. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, I take it back. Are there better names that rhyme with flux capacitor?
If your name rhymes with flux capacitor, please.
Let us know if there's a better name.
At a problem squared on social media.
No, at busted. So it's not too late to fix the lyrics. And then they explain the neighbor built a time machine from a film. And then...
Oh, my gosh. And then busted... joined with the band McFly to become McBusted. McBusted. But
yes.
McFly is the surname of Marty.
Oh my. There you go.
Wow.
They were foreshadowing McBusted.
Yeah.
By a decade.
Because they went to the future.
They knew.
Oh my goodness.
That's the whole premise of the whole song.
We're getting right to the bottom of this.
So far, everything holds together quite neatly. Now we hit the chorus, and this is where the vast majority of the information comes from. Oh, this is in the voice of the neighbor, though. He said...
Oh, yeah.
I've been to the year 3000. Not much has changed, but they lived underwater. So that's where that came from.
Mm-hmm.
And your great-great-great-granddaughter is pretty fine.
So...
Is pretty fine.
His neighbor, Peter...
His neighbor, Peter, is telling Busted...
He went to the future and he saw that person's...
I assume someone from Busted's great-great-great-granddaughter who is, quote-unquote, pretty fine.
Right.
In the kind of casual misogyny you'll get in very early 2000s boy band. And it doesn't get better.
Mm-hmm. He took me to the future in the flux thing, and I saw everything. Boy bands and another one and another one and another one. Triple oppressive women swim around town totally naked. We drove around in a time machine like one in the film I see. They get in the car. They go to the future. In the flux thing.
Yeah.
Flux thing.
Flux thing.
Come on, mate.
Come on, people.
Also, when he said his neighbor was standing there, you know, was my neighbor Peter and a flux capacitor. Like, the flux capacitor is in the DeLorean.
And actually, if you look in the video, it is a DeLorean there. Like, well, it's not. It's a car. It's not a DeLorean. It looks like some kind of late 80s, early 90s car.
Furious.
They comment upon the women of the future.
Yeah. This is the theme.
Yes, yes. First of all, they comment there's lots of boy bands.
Okay.
Just to put everyone's mind at ease.
Or just that they're aware that they're not that talented.
They're not that talented.
Anyone can do
plenty of them.
Oh, it's a reference to Total Recall.
Yeah.
So it says a warning for anyone with small children listening.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a perfectly normal body part. Triple-breasted women swim around town totally naked.
That's the line in its entirety. And so maybe they went back to the 1980s.
Which, to be fair, that is just an observation.
Just an observation. Stating facts.
Mm-hmm.
They drove around in their time machine.
Mm-hmm.
Then they reiterate they've been to the year 3000. Everyone's underwater. Great, great granddaughter.
Oh, yeah. Just more
fine.
Repetition.
More of that.
Because boy band.
Then they point out that the song that we're listening to has gone multi-platinum.
Oh, okay.
Which is meta.
Yeah, it's a bit hopeful, isn't it?
Everyone bought their 7th album.
Okay.
And it outsold Michael Jackson.
How many albums have Busted brought out?
As of now?
Yeah.
4.
Okay, so they've only got to make 3 in the next 982 years.
78, so close.
Oh, so close.
You added the 2 instead of subtracting it. Easy mistake.
This is why I've never been to the year 3000.
Yeah, exactly. You wouldn't get your flux thing
I wouldn't get
working.
My flux thing. I'd go into the past. I'd do the wrong calculation.
You would be in Total Recall.
Yeah.
Here's my issue. Oh, by the way, the rest of it, the rest of the song is Time Machine, 3000, Underwater, Great-Great-Granddaughter, Year 3000, Underwater, Great-Great-Granddaughter, Year 3000, underwater, great-great-granddaughter. 3000, underwater, great-great-granddaughter. They repeat that another four times. That's, right. There's no additional information.
So the next three albums might just be the same album.
Yeah. They're not against padding it out.
That's how it outsold Michael Jackson. They exactly. just kept...
Now, this song came out before Michael Jackson died.
Yes.
Obviously, they went to after Michael Jackson died.
Yeah.
So all I can imagine is they got there, realized he died not that long after the song came out, and realized on a technicality, they're now outselling Michael Jackson.
Oh, you're thinking in terms of outselling in the current... sense.
In yeah, I think what they're saying is as of the year 3000,
yes,
they are outselling Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
Because at the time, this was their first album. They'd only been a band for 2 years when this song came out. So they're projecting in the future they're bigger than Michael Jackson.
Yes.
And what I think they've realized, they've got to the future, realized he's deceased and gone on a technicality. If we're vague with the wording, we can go back to the past.
No, but you're assuming that everyone stops buying Michael Jackson albums after he dies.
No, that's a good point. Yeah. No, okay.
And even
1,000 years in the future, you reckon there?
All things considered surrounding that, that we won't delve into on the podcast, but people are still very much buying Michael Jackson.
Oh,
albums.
That's very true.
Yeah.
First issue, before we get to the great-great-great-granddaughter, is how are they 1,000 years in the future, only 7 albums into what is, by all accounts, a very successful and still current career?
Yeah.
They are obviously not releasing albums at a standard rate.
And are they saying that they're there?
Yeah. They're there in the year 3000. Still active performers, still selling out concerts.
Yeah.
I took it to mean the 7th album had just come out. They formed in the year 2000.
Mm.
They released their first album in the year 2003. When this song, these predictions were made, their Nostradamus moment.
All right.
They released the 2nd album the next year. And you're like, okay. That is a generous rate to that only do 7 in a millennium. They then ceased to be a band in 2005.
Right.
As everyone's like, well, these predictions of still being a band, ridiculous. But then, as you pointed out, they became McBusted. And then they became fully busted. They reformed in 2015.
Oh.
The predictions were true.
I see.
They reformed and produced another 2 albums.
Mm.
Which is why they're now up to 4. After a 10-year break. And so what I figure is, they're not like a regular band who are just putting out albums at a semi-regular interval. They will release a pair of albums and then go into stasis.
Oh, it's like me on YouTube.
It's like you on YouTube, yeah. And then release another pair of albums or videos,
yeah.
And then disappear again. And so
you're sensing a pattern.
I'm sensing a pattern.
Right.
Now, for this pattern to result in the 7th album coming out around the year 3000, they need to have another very long stasis, 2 more albums, another very long stasis, 2 more albums.
Okay.
And those last two are the 7th and 8th ones, and they have to straddle the year 3000.
I see.
And so I figured, what if each stasis is a multiple of the previous one?
Okay.
And if each time that they disband is 9.4373 times longer than the previous one, they will reform the final time in the year 2998.
Perfect.
Just in time.
Yeah.
To bring out the 7th album, to then have their past selves show up in the Flux thing.
Yeah.
So as long as their disbandings become exponentially longer, like a multiple of the previous one, that all checks out.
Great.
And so I'm like, okay, that's dealt with. Now, the great, great, great granddaughter. They see their future selves in the video. They have not aged that much. They've aged a couple of decades, not 1,000 years.
Right. And you were comparing images of them.
Yes, I looked at what they look like now compared to what the actors that play them in the video look like, and they didn't get it quite right.
So you could argue that they were replaced by people. Like every
it's like
time
a Doctor
they,
Who situation.
Yeah.
Each time
yeah,
they go into
exactly.
stasis, there's a new one regenerates.
Yeah.
That could be it.
So let's see, the first 2 times it was the same people.
Yep.
So the next 2 times
would be different people. I just figured
that. But how long is the stasis between those ones?
They get pretty long. The final one, they're out of action. They have the first gap for 10 years.
Mm.
They have another gap, which is 94.3.
Mm-hmm.
Then they have a gap that's 889.25 years.
Yeah.
And then they're back in action.
So I reckon each time, it doesn't quite fit because the first two are them.
Yeah, they do. Well, we think. I haven't compared.
Actually, we compared pictures of them from recently. Maybe it's not the same people.
Maybe they're different people.
Yeah.
There's a conspiracy no one's going to care about. When McBusted reformed in 2015, it was different people.
Regenerated. Yeah.
I just figured it was medical advances and whatever they do to extend their lifetime alter their appearance slightly. I feel like that's a...
I think it's more realistic.
That was they that come the out band, of their cocoon each time. They look different.
There's so many bad... Like the Wiggles aren't the original lineup anymore,
complete
are they?
Overhaul with the Wiggles.
Yeah.
It's so if Sugar the Wiggles can do it. Situation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think that's what's
I think
happened.
You're right. I think it's churn. Yeah.
Yeah.
But still with disbandings.
Mm.
And then when they reform, they recast.
Yeah, exactly. And the ones that form the band in 2998 might be so talented that even though Michael Jackson has had over a thousand
years of sales,
it's so good.
The seventh album,
it outsells them.
Amazing. Yeah, I think you're right.
I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, now onto the great granddaughter.
Okay.
Issue.
Yeah.
That's not, it's too long with current generational lengths for that to happen.
Right.
So part of the problem was how many generations would that actually be?
Okay.
And so I looked up.
And we know this from the family tree stuff you did in episode 034. Was it novel seal of approval and family?
For the record, Beck writes the titles.
I do.
It was a good one. Whatever it was
yeah,
great.
It rhymed. Anyway.
We know some family trees.
Yes.
And when I was looking at how many generations we are away from a common harbor seal. Now, I double checked my working out for that. I didn't include like proper human generations. I just had different mammals along the way. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, you know what? This time I'm going to properly look into what is the average human generation length.
Yeah, because it used to be that people would be having kids before they were 20. Or around early 20s. Now, at least in our society, it's closer to 30s.
Yeah. But it's interesting the difference between people going, oh, we think it's this, it's about that, versus actually working out what's happened historically. So some people analyzed the last 250,000 years of human evolution to work out the changing average generational gap.
Wow.
And it's substantially different by sex. So I looked up, this is human generational times across the past 250,000 years by some researchers in Indiana and Houston. And what they did was they looked at parts of DNA and genes that we know mutate at very predictable rates. They could track how they changed across different human populations across the last 250,000 years, which is all modern humans. And then they were able to work out how much the average generation was across time, and they could split it out comparing male to female only generational.
And when we're talking generation here, we're talking like the difference between when someone is born to when that person then has children.
Correct. It is the average age of an individual across all the times they had offspring.
Okay.
I think that's an accurate definition.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously if you have loads of kids, you're going to be different ages when you have them, but then you average your ages across all the children you have.
Got it.
And the male generational gap is consistently bigger than the female generational gap. And they don't go into why, but across history.
I'd argue it's because males can have offspring up until they die.
As long as you want.
Arguably.
Yeah.
Whereas females can't.
And childbirth is one of the larger causes of mortality.
Yeah.
So that could be a factor. I'm not qualified enough to speculate. But here is the plot.
Ooh.
And so we'll share this.
It's a fine looking graph.
Now, it's a bit confusing in so much as it's backwards. So this is it starts at the modern day and then goes back in time.
Oh, interesting.
And you're looking at a log plot.
Like my flux thing.
Like a flux thing. And you're looking at a log plot of number of generations on the x-axis. So it goes back to 10,000 generations ago. Which, if it's an average of, 25 years per generation, is about 250,000 years.
Got it.
But you can see, from 10,000 generations ago to about 1,000 generations ago, the average generation length was gradually going up until it's like high 20s. And actually for the male generational gap, it's over 30. And then it gradually came back down again. And now in modern times, it's going back up again.
Okay.
And so there's been some drift back and forth over human existence.
Mm.
And I don't know if you could argue this is on the order of us living in cities and agriculture. I'm just speculating, looking at the shape and the timeline. That's probably the recent uptick coming back up again. But their results were, across the entire thing, the average generational length across 250,000 years of human history is 26.9 years. Plus or minus 3.4 years.
Okay.
You can then split that out. The average male generational length was 30.7 years, plus or minus 4.8 years. And the average female generational length is 23.2 years, plus or minus 3 years.
Wow.
So now it depends if your great-great-great-granddaughter doesn't mean every generation with daughters in between, I assume. It just means through a bunch of descendants.
Yes.
Eventually daughter.
Yes.
Is fine. So we want to take the average generational length for this, which gives you 37.1 generations.
Wow.
Over 1,000 years.
Great,
from,
great.
From 2002, great. 998 years.
Great, 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 Grant. Oh,
you did too many. Start again.
Start again. Great.
35 greats.
Yeah. Yes. Going back to our
previous one. Although you could argue that the first generation's already alive, so you're already one generation in before you start counting because they're talking to someone.
Yes.
So arguably you knock one off.
So you'd only need like...
Or you'd add one because you've got enough time to do 37 more generations. So it would be your 38th generation by then, because the first generation's already alive, to be sung at in the song.
Yeah.
Check out. They've heard this noise about the flux thing.
Yeah.
So there. So to answer one part of the problem, that's, you're talking 35, 36 greats, depending on if you count the generation being sung at. Then we go, hang on, what if this is accurate? What if it is great-granddaughter? And actually, the gap in generations is going up.
Yeah.
Obviously, we're living longer. Generational gaps are going to get bigger.
Yeah.
I thought maybe it's like the stasis periods of Busted. Maybe it's an exponential increase in generational lengths. That means we are only up to our great-grandchildren in the year 3000.
So did you have to reverse engineer this?
I did. It is 2.1 times longer per generation.
Okay.
If each generation is 2.1 times the previous one, in the year 3000, it will be Busted's great-grandchildren kicking around.
Sure.
And everything lines up. So as long as, thanks to medical science, we have exponential increasing in generational lengths, the last generation is over 500 years on average. So to answer the problem, it's either 36 great-grandchildren or... the average generational gap is increasing exponentially by a factor of 2.1 per generation to make the lyrics accurate as written.
That is like the latter answer. Thank you, Matt. And thank you, Simon, because you have both given me a deep fascination with this song that I never had before. I'm going to give that a ding.
Our next problem is one of the more concise problems we've had put in the problem posing page at aproblemsquared.com. Someone has just entered, why do boys have nipples? ? Big problem.
Mm.
Now their name, because we do endeavor to credit these problems to the problem havers, is we think Danish. It's a long Danish sentence. En skal rod, rude? What's the O with a... it's R, null set, D. We think it's Danish for a type of pudding.
Berries in it.
Danish berry pudding person wants to know, why do boys have nipples? There is a lot to unpack here, Beck.
Fortunately, their name is not the problem they've posed.
Thank goodness.
Yeah. It's a nice quick answer, this one.
Right.
And that is because all embryos are female in the early stages.
Oh.
So they form nipples at that point.
Yep.
And then it's only, I think, after a few weeks that they differentiate between the male and female.
Oh. So you already, I was going to say grandfathered in. That's probably not the right phrase. The nipples are already locked in.
Yes. What's a grandfathered in?
Grandfathered in is where it's the gendered version of when you're ancestored into an old contract or deal.
Huh.
So if you've had the same mobile phone for a long time, you might be ancestored in to a better deal than is available now.
Got it.
But because you've never stopped using it, you've still got that locked in.
Yeah.
But it's often referred to as being grandfathered.
Yeah. Well, if anything, it's more grandmothered.
You've been you're grandmothered in to your nipples.
Yeah. So there you go.
And I guess there's no evolutionary pressure to not have nipples.
No.
Like we never lost vestigial nipples.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not like it's been a...
There's a great advantage to...
We haven't suddenly died because...
Ah, caught by the nipple.
Yeah.
Dead. Yeah.
Mm.
It has not happened enough.
Yeah.
For it to have an impact on the gene pool.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That was easy.
Yeah. Which is, again, why gender is a construct.
It's so true.
It's real. Yep.
So there you are, everyone. The problem and the solution were shorter than the name of the person who asked about it.
Do I get a
ding ding?
Dingles.
One ding per nipple. Our first B to any other is in a previous episode. I think this was last episode, one before. In the last couple episodes, we were discussing dental hygiene. And for some reason, we were arguing about if you couldn't brush your teeth with a toothbrush, what is the best food to eat? You were pro cheese?
Yes.
I was not.
No.
We asked the people.
We did. And you gave the options a carrot, an apple, or celery.
Right.
The votes were in.
Yep.
And I would say that a carrot and some cheese came in at 25.1%.
Yeah, neck and neck.
An apple got 16.7%.
Not good.
But coming in with the most amount of thoughts was celery at 33.1%.
You got to brush your teeth with celery.
So once the poll finished, I sent it to Dr. Sophie.
Oh, look at you.
Which, by the way, now, actually someone pointed out that I refer to Sophie as a professional dentist.
Professional dentist.
And they thought that was funny because it suggests that there's amateur dentists out there.
It does. And
which I would argue I am one, as someone who collects baby teeth.
You are an amateur dentist. Also, it highlights the fact that we need to point out that while you might think we approached an amateur dentist, we have actually approached a professional dentist.
Yes, exactly. We want to make that very clear.
Very clear.
But I also said it because I didn't know. And I asked you, are dentists doctors?
I did not know.
And so I asked. And because I looked it up, and in the UK, dentists are not... They don't do an MD.
Doctors,
they don't get a medical degree. So
they're not doctors.
Not medical doctors.
Gotcha.
But in Australia, MDs, yeah. They have to obtain a Doctor of Dental Medicine.
A DD.
DDM.
All right.
Or
because normally it's an MD. So my wife is a PhD.
Yes.
A medical doctor's an MD.
Yes.
And these guys are...
Actually, it says DMD, which
DMD.
I wonder stands for Doctor of Medical Dentistry.
Or Dental Medical Doctor.
Yes.
Or...
Might be. Or DDS, it says, Doctor of Dental Surgery, depending on the completion of their program. Either way, they are classified as doctors. So it is Dr. Sophie.
When you have a DDS attack, you can't speak. That's a niche computer security joke for everyone out there enjoying that.
Carry on.
As you were. Sorry.
I wish I got it.
The joke occurred to me and I went...
But people are going to go
nuts for
that.
I'm pretty sure this is a very small percentage of the audience.
Yeah. And I want to say that I'm really happy for you all.
Yes. And I'd like to apologize because I knew no one in the room would...
When you make those jokes, it's like having a partner who talks about having a really fun time with their very attractive colleague.
Oh,
you're like, that's cool.
I'm making jokes with other people.
I'm not jealous or anything. it's cool. I'm confident, but also I wish I could be a part of this. Yeah. So I messaged Dr. Sophie and sent her
those results. Yep.
And said,
this is what we thought.
What do you say?
This is what the people thought.
And she wrote back, the short answer is cheese.
What? It is not.
And then...
No way.
I'll read the rest of it because she's so brilliantly. So she said, so the enamel of your teeth is a mineral and it likes a neutral pH environment, not too acidic, not too basic, just right. The reason plaque and bacteria can damage your teeth is because when the bacteria eat sugar, they excrete acid.
Right.
The acid decreases the pH and the mineral of your enamel starts to break down.
All that sounds bad.
This is called demineralization. And if it continues, then you get a hole in your tooth. But the coolest thing ever is that not only can teeth demineralize, they can remineralize. They can
remineralize. That's amazing.
Yeah. So if the pH can go back to neutral and there's some calcium and phosphate floating around, then the tooth can reabsorb mineral and get strong again.
Amazing.
This tug of war between demin and remin is happening all the time.
Hmm.
So to keep enamel healthy and not get holes, you need more protective factors. So she said things on the team remin.
Yep.
But then you have risk factors, things on team demin.
Demin, yeah.
So team demin are sugars that are fermentable by plaque and bacteria. Lots of plaque, which can happen if you eat sugars frequently through the day and or have poor oral hygiene, and acidic food and drink.
Yep.
She's put a little picture of an apple next to that.
Well, that's why apple came last.
And for sugars, she's put the carrot and the apple. Because carrots are very high in sugar. Yeah. That's why you can have carrot cake.
Oh, yeah.
Team remin. Saliva. Now, as we've mentioned several times now, I won't even say what episode numbers, but no, anytime
all of them.
Teeth has come up, saliva. It's got the calcium and phosphate in that you need for remin. Plus, it's a buffer. So it comes into an acidic environment, buffers the acid to get the pH back to neutral, and then supplies the calcium and phosphate to remineralize the teeth.
It's the full remin team.
She's written, honestly, it's magic.
No, you sure she's a doctor?
Yeah, that's right. A doctor of magic. Toothpaste, because enamel that has fluoride in it is 10 times more resistant to acidic environments and therefore 10 times more resistant to demin.
Got to be remin.
And therefore 10 times more resistant to getting holes. Water, because it dilutes the acid and increases the pH.
Oh, nice.
And she said, here's the piece de resistance. Unsweetened dairy.
Unsweetened dairy.
Because it's high in calcium and it acts as a natural buffer. So you eat cheese and you raise the pH of your mouth and encourage mineral uptake by your enamel. Cheese is the only one on that list that's on team remin, so it's a clear winner. In a close second place is celery. For its low sugar content and fibrous texture, that should brush, just put in brackets,
exact, thank you,
some of the plaque away. It's got Switzerland in this demin-remin war because it would remove plaque but isn't actively encouraging the remineralization of the enamel. Yep. She also says that if you were more worried about gum disease than decay, then celery might come out on top.
There
because
you go.
In that scenario, plaque removal is key.
Sounds like one all.
And remin versus demin is less critical. Carrots and apples are not even contenders for me. They have a high sugar content, albeit natural sugar, but unfortunately the plaque bacteria don't care if it's natural or artificial sugar. They're going to use the same anyway. So in my eyes, their sugar content outweighs the benefit of any mechanical plaque removal they do. They're on team demon.
So the answer is, get some cheese. Put it in some celery.
I then suggested, would you say cottage cheese
there
and
we
celery
go.
Would make the perfect can't brush my teeth snack? And then she said, yep, cheese and celery make a great combo. I'm struggling to think of a better one, to be honest. But then she did suggest, or just staring at your favorite food, but not eating it, so your mouth fills with saliva. So,
yep.
Obviously, the best thing you can do is
brush your teeth.
Yeah. But we now know that if you're hungry and you can't brush your teeth, cottage cheese on celery.
There you go. Cheese and celery.
You're less likely to end up with...
And can I just say, cheese and celery were the top two.
Mm.
If you assume that, if you really look at some more decimal places, cheese edges out carrot, then
we're both right.
Yeah, the listeners, you've nailed it.
But I feel very vindicated.
I can't believe it. I'm still mildly suspicious, but you said doctor a lot, so I feel like it must be true. Our last bit of AOB is we are going to New York City.
We are
specifically, which is very exciting,
and very soon after you hear
very
this.
Soon oh my goodness. So if you're near New York City, now we're not actually doing a Problem Squared, like a show while we're there.
No.
But we are doing a show.
Yes.
So I'm doing an evening of Unnecessary Detail, which is a regular show that we used to do in London. And you've come along many times.
Yes. It's a fantastic show. I enjoy doing it.
I host it. And a bunch of my nerdy friends talk about something in an unnecessary level of detail. What's not to like?
Yeah.
So we're doing that at Caveat, which is a comedy club. Lower Manhattan somewhere on Saturday, the 8th of October at 4 p.m., which is a slightly early slot, but I'm not changing the title to an afternoon of unnecessary detail. It's still evening. So 4 o'clock, caveat, we'll have a link wherever links are.
Well, it'll be technically put. Evening in the UK.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's a UK-based show. So I'm doing it. I'll be hosting. You're going to come along and do a spot.
I'm going to do it. Yep.
We've also got Grant Sanderson from 3 Blue 1 Brown, YouTube channel about maths. And Moira Dillon, a friend of mine, she's a psychology researcher at NYU, studies early childhood understanding of math.
One of these things is not like the other.
Exactly like that.
It's me. It's me, guys.
And other acts.
Yeah. But there'll be flip charts.
There'll be flip charts. That'll be great fun.
Yeah.
So if you want to come along, you can see both of us on stage. Which yeah. is not dissimilar to this podcast.
No, that is true. I'm very excited.
I'm very, very excited.
And the profits go to WaterAid.
Yep. Everything goes to charity. Mm-hmm. Which is very exciting.
Not great for us financially. No, but
if anything, we're losing money.
We are.
What are you
going to do? For the love.
What are you going to do? So if you want to come along and see us, that'd be great. If you can't.
Oh, I should also say that you tweeted a very subtle link to this last night and there's already been an uptake
Well
of
over
tickets.
10% of tickets are gone already.
Yeah, so
we might try and keep it quiet so there's still tickets available. We are the worst promoters ever. Yeah, come along. It'll be emotional. It'll be fun. You can still join in, even if you can't get to New York City, because we figure we're both there for the weekend. We may as well record an episode while we're out there.
Yes.
So we're going to record a New York special, a New York episode.
Yeah.
We'll be in New York.
Yeah, for Problem Squared.
We're going to record an episode.
A Problem Times Squared.
A Problem Times Squared. Oh, my goodness. Oh, I don't think we can record it in Times Square. We're going to get yelled at. We'll look into that. If anyone's got a problem which is New York related, that we can solve while we're in New York, let us know.
Yeah.
Use the keywords New and York on the problem posing page at problemsquared.com.
Yep.
And we will, if there's a good one, if we can get, the ideal problem would be one that forces us to have an excursion. Gets us out and about.
I want to go to Coney Island, but that is more New York State.
Well, okay. That's not close, but...
No. You're probably thinking more Manhattan.
I'm definitely thinking Manhattan.
Yeah.
I do love exploring Manhattan and making stupid videos. So exploring Manhattan and making a stupid podcast would be a lot of fun.
I would like that. So aproblemsquared.com.
Or come see us. Caveat.nyc.
And as always, we want to thank all of our listeners for doing such a great job. Thank you. Supporting us, telling other people to listen to us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And a special thank you to our Patreon supporters who allow this to occur.
Yes.
So we'd like to thank three random Patreon supporters each episode. And Matt, you've put it into the machine.
Yep.
You've crunched it.
Three random names have come out.
Three random names have come out. So we'd like to thank...
Chaos Floors, all one word.
Tony B.
Dano W, all one word.
Big thank you to you. And finally, a massive thank you to Matt Parker.
Thank you.
Myself, Bakil. Thank you. And our brilliant producer, Lauren Armstrong Carter.
Thank them.
It's more of an instruction.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank them. You know what we should do?
Yeah.
Because we're out of my out-of-date...
Thank goodness.
...chips.
I thought this would never happen.
But we're going to New York.
Correct.
So we need to find a New York alternative to...
There must be a USA twisty.
Yeah. Crunchy, cheesy crisps. Crunchy Cheetos, maybe?
Maybe a type of Cheetos.
If you're aware of twisties and you think that there is a US equivalent...
That we can find in New York City?
Yeah. Let us know.
We're not going to Coney Island, somewhere in the center.
Let us know on the problem posing page at A Problem Squared or on socials at A Problem Squared.